The team at Violent Gentlemen saw what I could do at their weekly skate and decided it was time to make our relationship official. Proud to announce the newest sponsor of the Eat 'Em Up podcast, Orange County's finest Violent Gentlemen Hockey Club. What up, Orange Country? Wow, we got a big epi here today. We have Jamal Mayers, former Stanley Cup champion, and I can't wait to pick his brain. So we'll bring him right in. Jamal, how are you? And just thanks for doing this.
Absolutely. Great to catch up. I've seen you doing some great work and excited to chat about the Pacific. It's getting a little more interesting now. So it's exciting.
One thing, and I don't want to talk about you bringing home the hardware. I bet you've talked about you winning a Stanley Cup 1,000 times over. So I check Jamal out. He's everywhere right now. You can get that story. I want to talk about the difference of skill and habits from when you won the cup back in 2012, 2013 as a member of the Blackhawks. I want to know the difference from a habits and skills perspective from when you won the cup to maybe even the last 3-4 playoffs. Like, what are some of the key differences?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's changed quite a bit in regard to like just the overall skill set that these young players and this generation of players have is off the charts. And so what you're seeing on a nightly basis is any kind of mistake is in the back of your net, which wasn't, it was very similar that way, but the overall skill and ability to make plays and ability to like beat people one-on-one throughout the entire lineup is way deeper, I believe, than it was when I played. You still have role players, but I think that you have more like top nine and then you have a fourth line. And, you know, back then, I believe you had like top two lines and you had bottom six. And the bottom six were very similar in their skill set. I think now it's a top nine and a lot of those guys are more interchangeable in regard to like who can fit into those roles. I do think some of the detail, the game management, the understanding of time, score, situation has been lost in a little bit in regard to like how to manage the game, how to play the game the right way. I think the winning teams do it extremely well. I think winning coaches have communicated better with their younger players if they're able to do that. But that to me are the two biggest differences. As much as the skill is so much greater, I do question how much they understand the players today, not all of them, but I think the challenge today is getting them to understand how to manage the game and how to, you know, play the time, the score, who you're on the ice with, what that changes, what you do with the puck and where you leave it and the game management portion.
Wow, that's some great insight right there. And I want to touch on that last point you made, situational awareness and overall game management. The one thing I've really been noticing over the last, I don't know, 3-4 seasons is how teams are approaching empty nets, right? I mean, I see teams go for it more now than ever before in difference of just getting the soft flip into the neutral zone. You know what I mean? And just trying to, I mean, not result in a defensive zone draw. It just seems crazy to me, right? The percentages there. So I kind of liken, you know, what I've seen there to your last point there. And has there been a trickle down effect even to the minor leagues when it comes to that skill perspective, like as far as guys getting younger? I mean, you can't be seeing, you know, 35 plus year olds too often there down in the jungle, right?
No, I think you're right. And if we're to unpack this, I have a couple of really strong feelings on this and I'll try to say it as articulately as possible. But the way that I see it is this. I am not one of those older players. I'm 51. I played, you know, I retired in 2013, quite a while ago. I'm not afraid of the analytics and what it has added to the game. But what I will say this about that portion of it is that it has to become less than a math problem and a combination of the math that tells you, yeah, you should go for it in certain situations, but also how's the game been going? Have you been winning the faceoffs? Have you been stuck in your zone for an X amount of time? How's the momentum changed so drastically that it doesn't make sense to go for it all the time, regardless? So I feel like if you want to create a chart and you want to create the analytic, use the analytics. But to me, you have to also protect your position, understand that you've been under siege for a certain amount of time, and it's not the right or prudent thing to do to just go for it. I think that that's the challenge, is like, how are coaches managing that? And if you want to lean into the analytics, they have to also use their feel, where they say, guys, the analytics aren't in our favor to go for it. We're gonna punt. It doesn't mean I don't believe in you guys. It just means at this point in this game, in this situation, based on how the last 7-8 minutes have gone, it does not make sense for us to go for it. We've lost 5 out of 6 faceoffs. Our best defensive forwards have not done a good job in the last 2.5 minutes. We are under siege, and it is not a good idea for us to do that. Having said that, I also believe the way that teams defend 6-on-5, and I will take Vegas and Carolina, to me, do it right. They pressure the puck. The days of 5-on-a-dice, where you got, you know, you're basically killing a penalty with the center in the middle, you're kind of just holding fort, those days are gone. The offensive players are licking their chops. You want to stay in a box and one, when we're 6-on-5, we're gonna figure it out. We're gonna eat you alive, and we're gonna get a chance. If not one chance, we're gonna get 4 chances in the next minute and a half. I love when teams, and you've seen Carolina do it, you've seen Vegas do it, you've seen, I think, Joel's teams will do it. You'll pressure the puck. So the center plays off the puck. We're pressuring the puck. We're trusting our instincts. Yeah, they're going to have to make 3 really good plays to break it down. They could still do it, but I'll take those chances over just sitting back and waiting and hoping and thinking you're going to protect the middle of the ice. They're going to pick you apart. So I kind of equate those two things together in regard to going for the empty netter and package them together, and how our teams defending 6-on-5 and what's available. I think they come to, you can't talk one without talking about the other.
If you love today's content, then I'd love for you to take a trip over to VGHC.com or stop by their Costa Mesa flagship store to see what the club is cooking up for hockey fans worldwide. Ladies and gentlemen, you're hearing firsthand why Jamal has played 915 regular season NHL games. I mean, just the in-depth perspective right there from you is just incredible. And I want to just piggyback off of one of the first things you said, going back to the skills and habits question, is a lot of these younger guys are being forced to play such better defensive hockey when they don't have the puck, right? That's mm-hmm. what happens when you're seeing the third, fourth line, or at least third, turn more of a skill rather than, you know, grit, maybe in the era that you played in. So it all goes hand in hand. Speaking of your championship win there, Coach Q, the Ducks, he was at the helm there when you were with the Hawks. Give Ducks fans a insight to who Joel is as a person, you playing under him, and even furthermore, just what makes him tick as a very successful head coach in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, you know what? I can't say enough great things about Joel. And I was fortunate, started my career with him when I was 21 and played for him for 6 years, and then back with him at the end of my career for a couple of years when I was 37, 38. So a lot of things changed and a lot of things stayed the same. And what I think his superpower, in my opinion, is identifying early on who's going on a given night. And so, I mean, you know this, you've been there. And then how disappointing is it when, and for me, I was always on the bottom six, right? I was either on third line or fourth line. But I knew with Joel, I could eat up some of that third line guy's minutes. I could take 4 of his shifts if I started on time, if I did the right things, if I was ready to go. Those minutes were up for grabs. And an extra 3 or 4 shifts for you and I, it means a lot. It means you're playing an extra 3-4 minutes, and now you're really in the game. I think that he's created that accountability within the group that there are minutes up for grabs, whether it's the second line taken away from the first line, or it's the third line taken away from the first line, or it's the fourth line taken away from the second line. You had to be on notice that Joel's, you're not going to be able to hide. He's going to figure out who's going, who's not going, and you'll get rewarded by how much you play because of it. The other thing that I loved about Joel is that he had emotion. I don't know how some of these coaches, I couldn't play for them. When they're just stoic behind the bench, they're just calm. That's not for me. I need to play with emotion. I liked when my coach was getting into it emotionally, and I love that about Joel. He's in the game. He's fired up. He's right there with you in the fight. And I think players feed off of that. They feel it. And he's just a smart guy. Like, I'm not surprised what he's done already with the Ducks, because think about it. If you're Leo Carlson, if you're Gauthier, if you're Seneca, and he's telling you a story about a young Kane, a young Taze, and that why would you guys wait to do this? You guys are ready now. Wouldn't you get more confidence if you're those three guys? Like, and I'll put Lacombe into there as well. That, whoa, Joel's been there. He's done that. He's also smart enough to bring in guys, and I mean assistant coaches, so that he's insulated with where the game's going in regard to power play this or PK this, or this is what we do situational these. So I think he's smart enough to use his assistant coaches and what they're good at, let them do what they do well. But the game management piece, I played for, you know, really good coaches. You know, Joel's at the top of the list for me in regard to his awareness and game management and in-game adjustments, and just his overall feel during the game was, you know, how many times have you done it? I'm sure where you sit there and you're like, does our coach feel what's going on or see that the moment? And some coaches, as good as they might be, they don't have that feel. I love that about Joel. He felt it. He was there with you and could feel it when it was happening in real time.
That's powerful stuff. And so the viral moment of Coach Q pretty much laying down on the back of Beckett Seneca there on the bench after he disagreed with that call. You love that, hey?
Oh, I love it.
Oh, that's fantastic. No.
Yeah. And I think the players love it because you're in the fight with them. You don't have to. And you know what? What it teaches you to do, and I guarantee you they're there already, is you don't argue with the refs. And sometimes Joel will do it, and he's smart enough to do it because he's looking for the next call, right? And he might even say under his breath on the bench, like, how'd that sound, boys? And you know he's just doing it for the next call. And next thing you know, the ref gives you the call that you're looking for, and Joel's like, you're welcome, boys. Yeah. And so, you know, I love that part about him. He's in the game, and, you know, he's in the battle with you. And I'm sure the current Ducks players have a lot of funny stories just like that.
Oh, you're so right. And this is, I'm getting this, I of course, he's never been my coach, but just in the hallways when we're speaking, trying to get some in-depth insight in the game at hand, he's like one of the boys, right? He talks to you and he jokes around you with that in that manner. And so I 100% understand with everything you're saying. So, oh yeah, he's a beauty. Going back to your 915 National Hockey League regular season games, you don't hit that mark without just playing phenomenal hockey when it comes to play without the puck. Now, we've touched on it, but maybe dive a little bit deeper into your experiences with how long you playing that style of game.
Yeah, I think it comes down to detail, and the detail of like the monotony of the detail of things that sometimes younger players don't necessarily appreciate or value, or you might have the challenge for today's younger player is when they're in junior, they see success of a player, ex player that's on Tampa Bay. And you're like, I was better than him in junior. How is it possible that he's on the second unit power play and I'm not even surviving? Like, that has to be really hard for today's player. And sometimes it takes them away from what they are, or what they could become. And I think it is about the detail picking up a rim as a winger, protecting the puck, with your back toward the, you know, making a slip play to your centerman, the detail of what you're doing on a, off a faceoff, one loss or draw, like what you're doing. Am I helping the center first and then going to where I need to go? You know, am I slashing across, pushing the D back because I'm going to, we're going to slash support, chip it behind their D, set them up for the later in the game. And am I being physical as a third and fourth line guy? Why am I doing that? Because I want that when our good players are out there, I want them thinking I'm coming so that they get nervous and make a bad play to the good players. I think that diving into the detail, like understanding faceoffs, I'll tell you one funny story. So my last year playing with Chicago, I was amazed at, you know, we had Saad was a young guy. We had Shaw, young guy. They had no idea how to take a faceoff. Like, they didn't understand the science of the faceoff. And I was, I'm like, I became proficient at it because, I don't know if you know this name, but a guy named Mike Eastwood, playing for the Blues, was on the penalty kill. He was on the ice at the end of games. And I'm like, how was he on the ice at the end of the games? And I'm like, oh, it's because he's taking a faceoff. He's a right-hander and he's taking a face. I got to learn how to take faceoffs. So then I dug into how do I get on the ice? I'm going to have to become that guy who takes the faceoff on the right side. Anyway, the reason why I'm telling you all this is because there's a science to it. Like I used to tell the young guys, like if the guy puts his stick on this half of the pie, he physically can't go the other way. He's telling you what he's doing. So this is what he's doing. He's either doing this or this. It has to be one of those two things. And then they start to understand, oh, that's what he's doing. So then now they're starting to understand the science of what's going on, where he's positioning his stick, his body position. He's telling you what he's doing. Use that information so you know what you're doing. And then there's all those little things, like a guy, Scott Mellenby, played a long time. Was assistant GM for years in Montreal, one of the best teammates ever. He always used to say to me, Jammer, use the blue paint like a magnet. He goes, always start at the net. Start at the net, you can go to the corner. Back to the net, to the corner behind the net. Start at the net. He's like, always start at the net. And that has become even more relevant in today's game. I would say more than half of the teams are now running a swarm defense, right? Where they want to outnumber. And so they'll send both D into the corner with the centerman. The strong side winger will be in that lane to the point. And you have a winger at the net front. Very unfamiliar place for you or I stand as forwards, but that's the way teams defend. And so you have to teach that, teach players like all these different, you know, understanding of the game and what to do and where to go. But if you start at net front offensively, you can't start in the corner. You're starting their swarm. So I always tell players now, and I coach like 13-year-olds, start at the net. If you start in the corner, you're inviting whatever defense they're employing, you're inviting pressure. So I think all the good teams, they go to the corner, of course, when the puck's there, but they start at the net. They know they're going to get swarmed. They change sides. Like there's a whole system to it. And again, I get all excited talking about it, but I kind of, I don't know if I answered your question, but I got a little bit sidetracked there.
Jamal, you're on fire right now. Absolutely on fire. No, it just, everything you said, it comes down to the details, right?
And yes, yes.
Yeah, there's nothing I could possibly add that is going to be better than what you just relayed out, some great points there. Who do you like on this current Ducks squad?
Oh, number of players. You know, for me, Cutter Gauthier is unbelievable. His shot, his release. I think obviously Carlson is really hard to say this, but possibly underrated for what he does on a nightly basis. And I think he kind of came out during these playoffs. But probably my favorite forward is Seneca. I think there's a nastiness to his game, like a nastiness in today's level, right? Of today's game.
It's like a Brendan Shanahan type of.
Yeah, there's a nastiness to his game I love. You know, if you have your head down and he's going to catch you, he might give you a whack or a slash. I love that about his game, and he has the skill set to finish. And then on the back end, I mean, Lacombe is a special D. I think that it was kind of strange watching him in the playoffs, and I was thinking like, how did he not play more at the Olympics? Like, this guy's unbelievable, you know? And you don't really appreciate. I started to appreciate him more, you know, doing, you know, Sharks games and covering and watching a lot more of you guys. But yeah, those are the four guys for me that jump off the page, and I'm sure had Joel really excited and the reason why, you know, they took a huge step this year.
No misses there. That's for sure. Look, you're a busy guy. I know you got to get going. And I planned for, I told you 15 minutes, and shame on you, Jamal. You have been giving me such good and long answers that we're going a little bit over time here. Last one. What is Jamal Mayers doing currently, and what's next for you?
Yeah, you know, I love staying in the game. When I first retired, I started doing stuff with NHL Network when it used to be in Toronto. Then it kind of parlayed into doing stuff with the Hawks for 8 years, pre and post. Then I started doing games as the color analyst, which I think that's kind of my lane. I really love doing that. Did mostly TV, but now I'm doing stuff with the Sharks. So I'm doing a lot of that. So analyst as a radio analyst with the Sharks for next year. Not all the game, but almost all the games. And, you know, they've been great to me. And I do some stuff from home for Sportsnet in Canada. So, you know, kind of still on the media side, coaching my son who's 13. He's getting to that age where he's not listening to me anymore. So I'm taking a step back now, an assistant coach, but it's improved our relationship, which I think is a good thing. And yeah, man, just playing a lot of golf in the summer. So enjoying that and enjoying family time.
Well, what a life, and everything you've received and earned, so well deserved. I mean, the cup, long career. And it seems like you're having a blast right now. So thanks for taking the time coming on Eat 'Em Up here, and look forward to the next one, man.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
This is an Anaheim Ducks original production on DuckStream.